Over 30 years ago, a British filmmaker named Tony Palmer began the ambitious project of putting together a 17-part series on the history of popular music for London Weekend Television, a commercial channel in Britain. The last episode aired in 1980. It's now available as a 5-DVD set. Recently, our rock historian Ed Ward sat down and watched the whole thing.
All you need is love. They couldn't even get the theme music right. The note where you'd sing need goes up instead of staying the same. Maybe they thought they were improving it. Although, given the rest of the stuff on these DVDs, I just put it down to sloppiness. It's incredible. In the mid-70s, when these films were made, nobody knew more about pop music than the British. Yet, day after day, I watched, taking notes, agog at the misperceptions and downright errors here. What were they thinking? And who was this guy Tony Palmer who threw this dog's dinner together? Is he the guy with the weedy voice who narrates the incoherent first episode and informs us that, among other things, jazz did not come up the river from New Orleans and blues didn't come from West Africa? Well, of course not. The Africans who sold slaves to the Europeans weren't selling their own people. But I bet Palmer was responsible for the footage of a searing performance by Fela Anikulapu Kuti, probably the most important pop musician to come out of Nigeria in the 20th century, and calling it a strident imitation of white rock music. It doesn't get better after that, at least not for a good long while. Among other things, there's the bizarre editing which characterizes most of the episodes, giving us a montage of the Count Basie Orchestra and the Ku Klux Klan, B.B. King playing The Thrill Is Gone behind Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and, most memorably of all, footage of cowboys riding bulls in a rodeo, while Nick Lucas, an American singer who introduced the song in the 1920s, sings Tiptoed Through the Tulips. But eventually the series gets a little better. When Palmer turns the script over to Jack Good for the rock and roll episode, the one dealing with Elvis, Gene Vincent, Carl Perkins, and Little Richard, things finally turn around. Good was the youngest producer at BBC Television when rock and roll hit England, and the shows he produced did far more than radio to spread the word of the new music. His self-deprecating memories and sense of humor about Britain's early rockers give an unusual insight into the birth of a culture in a country which would give it back to the land of its birth in a radically changed style.
In England, when rock started, there were no musicians who had any background in anything that would subsequently have anything to do with rock. The British popular music had been, ever since the advent of jazz, totally imitative. Tommy Steele, for instance, his band was abominable. And he just came on the stage and yelled at the audience. And it was a really revolting display because it meant nothing. It was totally empty. The music was awful, and it was just an example of how foolish the public were to watch such a thing.
The Beatles episode follows, and again Palmer turns the script over to the right person, Derek Taylor, who was the press officer for the Beatles, the Byrds, and the Beach Boys, and whose wry take on the whole thing saturates the episode. It's a masterpiece of concision, fitting not only the Beatles, but the whole Summer of Love and the Monterey Pop Festival, which Taylor also had a hand in, into its 51 minutes. Next, we get Sour Rock, not a label which stuck, which deals with the Rolling Stones, the deaths of Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and Jim Morrison, and the hippie dream going bad. The last two episodes, though, have a secret weapon. Rock critic Lester Bangs, young, articulate, sarcastic, and in fine form, denouncing mid-70s rock as only someone deeply immersed in it could.
I've never had to pay any dues because I grew up not rich, but with enough money. I could always afford any record, any magazine I wanted. You know, I had a car, this and that. We lived in the suburbs. Our parents supported us in general. We had the leisure to screw ourselves up, you know. Musically, something's gonna have to happen pretty soon. It's like waiting for the Renaissance, you know, when everybody thinks that it has to happen. It's commonly said that every, you know, 10 years there's a big star and it's in the middle of the decade. Dick Clark said this in an interview I did once. He said, well, you know, there was Sinatra in the 40s and there was Elvis in the 50s and the Beatles in the 60s and now's the time, and that was 2 years ago. and nothing has happened.
His insights are startlingly apt, not to mention prophetic. It's entirely possible that as he was saying that last bit, his friend Patti Smith in New York was urging Hilly Kristal to let her boyfriend's band play at Kristal's bar, CBGB's, thereby igniting a revolution which would wipe the bloated excess these episodes document so well from public consciousness. To be fair, there are moments in all the episodes which are worth watching. UB Blake, then in his 90s, is incredibly articulate and funny when discussing ragtime, and Irving Caesar, in his 80s, casually mentions how he wrote all of his hit tunes in under 15 minutes, including Tea for Two, which, he claims, took 6 minutes to write. John Hammond takes the film crew to the club where he first saw Billie Holiday and talks candidly about racism in the music business, and Artie Shaw projects a sharp intelligence talking about the swing era. Some of the documentary footage is astonishing, too. A mind-bogglingly racist newsreel of John Lomax and Leadbelly recreating Lomax's discovery of the singer. Actual footage of a cakewalk, Marlena Dietrich in a gorilla suit, and a film performance by Jimmy Rogers. But all of this is fed through an almost knee-jerk anti-Americanism typified by the omnipresent rodeo footage and footage of Disneyland, which drives home the idea that Americans are buffoons, and an elevation of some musical question marks like British jazzer Mike Gibbs, British protest songwriter Leon Rosselson, and the Japanese show-off drummer Stomo Yamashita. It's a product of its time and place, and while I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for your collection, maybe your public library or video rental place has it. If so, watch at your own risk, but do grab that last disc with the Beatles, Stones, and Lester Bangs.
Ed Ward lives in southern France. Ed sends a special thanks to British rock historian Peter Frame.